Good morning, everyone.
I'm James Fernie here at Acora today. We're going to be tackling some interesting subjects with my esteemed colleague and dear friend, Nick. But before we start, I just wanted to give a bit of background for everyone listening today about some of the topics and a little bit around Acora as well. So I've been with Acora now for just under a year and have spent the last 10 years leading cyber practices at large organizations such as BDO, McLaren, and spent some time at Fujitsu and Microsoft. So I've had quite a large technical background and now have the pleasure of leading a commercial sales practice for Acora. And today we're going to be partnering with Silverfort, one of our key strategic vendors, to talk about a couple of key business challenges and risks we see in the industry and how we're helping organizations address those risks. Nick, would you just like to do a little bit of background on yourself and a little bit on Silverfort, please?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, James. Thanks for inviting me here today. So firstly, my name's Nick Colin. I've been at Silverfort for just over 3 years. In fact, I was the sort of first boots on the ground here in the country. But my background actually is in privilege access management, which goes back probably longer than I care to mention, but probably sort of 12, 13 years into the early days of what you would call PAM. So I've seen a lot of the evolution within that. Silverfort was of interest to me when I first saw it because it addressed a key challenge in PAM, which I knew couldn't be addressed with any of the conventional techniques. So a little bit of interest around the background to the company. So Silverfort was founded in Israel. The founders were all from the 80-200 division of the IDF. So a lot of technology which has then emerged and then been productized has come from that. And it's a classic case, really, I think, of a poacher turned gamekeeper, because what our founders looked for, they were like thinking, you know, should we design something that looks at zero-day threats or any of these new fancy technologies, when in reality, all of the exploits that they had seen and were aware of were actually attacking legacy protocols. So by that, we're talking about really Active Directory. So the company in its sort of genesis was to put protection on those other access gateways, which were exploited probably by them and lots of other operators at the time as well. So that's where the company came from. And that in its first format, it was really about putting MFA on those areas. But very quickly, once it realized that, it was looking at identity as a whole. So Silverfort's mission now really is to provide a layer of identity protection, which actually unifies all of the underlying technology providers. You know, for example, Microsoft, you've got Okta. They provide services, but they're not an identity security service. So Silverfort actually ties all of those together and provides a unique protection, which we see constantly exploited, which I know we'll explore that later, which are a number of the different drivers that a lot of our customers have come to, you know, be it cyber insurance or service account viewpoints or other areas like this. So a lot of those areas. So that's where Silverfort's come from. And, you know, certainly I've seen a lot of growth since I joined. You know, the company's expanded massively and we have quite a large and growing footprint.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what's super poignant for me, and we do love a statistic in cyber, is, you know, you read the latest Verizon reports, the Data Breach Insight reports, 76% of cyber incident breaches are pertaining to identity. You know, we spend all our money, our time, our focus on sexy, shiny controls to stop bad things happening. But then it's that soft underbelly sometimes, right, in terms of identity, which actually causes the major impact. So, you know, Acora, we spend a lot of time underwriting security assurance testing, that sort of thing. We look at IT infrastructure. We look at weaknesses, you know, through our attack informs defense model, right? So that's our offensive testing, know thy enemy and prove what an attacker could do in your environment. We're seeing, you know, the majority of the attacks always result in legacy identity, you know, the stale permission, the stale privilege, the credentials in a text file somewhere. So whilst it's great, we as an industry spend lots and lots of money on the preventative side of things, I think it's those hygiene issues typically which, you know, cause businesses to stumble. I just wanted to hear from you really about some of the lessons learned on that. And, you know, you've seen it from both a preventative and a response capability. What's your view on that statistic around identity, you know, 76% of all breaches relating to it? And do you think that's why Silverfort's grown so much? Because now businesses are starting to get it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because business is starting to get it. Cyber insurance underwriters are starting to get it because they're paying out on policies and they're looking at the same thing, saying, why are we paying out it? Actually, it's about administrative access to critical resources. More often than not, that will pertain to Active Directory, to your point, exactly. So absolutely, it's around that. So you start with hygiene. And if you look at any attack, they all different ways you can get into the building. And often when I'm sort of sat trying to explain this to, you know, sort of friends and family, it's all a bit like a bank heist. You know, there's different ways that you can get into the bank. You're either going to go in disguise, you're going to try and get in. But ultimately, they all follow the same MO, is that you want to get inside. So we're talking about when a threat actor or somebody else has got inside your environment, what they're going to look for is all the same thing. They're going to look for an account which they can use to escalate privilege. And then once they've escalated privilege enough, essentially they get a silver ticket, a golden ticket. And for most organizations, when a threat actor has a silver ticket, golden ticket, their existing toolkits are just too slow to respond in time. There's a takeover.
Yeah.
And that's specifically where we've seen some of our success. So yes, we help with the identity and we can see all of the authentications, the threat detection. We can spot out the scale accounts, the different areas which could be threatened. But also, if you look at sort of ITDR, which is this growing area, there's identity, threat, detection, response. There are lots. There are 10 a penny of detection organizations. But all of them, really, bar Silverfort, their response is to raise a ticket to the SOC, to add more knowledge to what's going on.
Yeah, and that's not timely enough, is it?
And that's not timely. Imagine if someone suddenly got, you know, keys to the kingdom. That's not really going to help. Whereas Silverfort is able actually to do the alerting, but it can also turn a detection into an active block, be that with MFA or actually be just with an easy deny policy anyway in itself, thereby just taking a lot of that risk straight off the table. I mean, you mentioned about some of those attacks. So strangely enough, we've actually had some help desk incidents where our help desk, hello, this is Silverfort. Your MFA isn't working properly. It keeps on pinging. And it's like, okay, let's have a look at this. So we've investigated, and actually the company's been under attack. Somebody's got in. It was a defense company. They got past all of their normal toolkits and they were inside. But it was simply the fact that a threat actor was trying to elevate a process, probably trying to run a PowerShell script, which is 70% of, you know, ransomware leverages PowerShell. Because we are able to actually put a control when normally attackers think they're in and it's game over, we were able to thwart that attack. You know,
it's a really good point. I think, you know, when we see a lot of the testing results we perform, and that's against SOCs as well, so organizations who may outsource that, insource, or some form of hybrid model, when we run those tests, it's, you know, when it's noisy and when there's a moment of crisis and everyone's looking over here, threat actors typically are actually creeping around the back door over here, right? And I think that, you know, as CISOs, as security leaders, we need to adopt that model of assumed breach. That's the language we use with our clients, which is that rather than believing that you are impenetrable, because let's be clear, you're not. That's why major banks and huge retailers are compromised routinely. It's all about that blast radius, that limiting the impact of an attack. And to my mind, and again, grateful for your views, I think if you consider the fact that once you've got enough privilege within an environment, you've probably got the ability to actually turn off, disable, or circumvent all of those other security controls, right? You know, there's always a big debate I see in industry about your security tools and whether or not you should single sign on them, because it's really useful for security. But then all it takes is one security administrator privilege to be compromised, and then you're into every single security tool, the configuration, the back end. And again, through lived experience, we're seeing twofold. You know, carve out role-based access, avoid single sign-on like the plague. And secondly, think about those super privileged roles. Because if you start there, then Silverfort and controls around identity don't seem like the never-ending project we all know to be PAM. Right, I think there's a pragmatic view which you need to take. So it would be good just to hear from you a little bit, Nick, about, you know, successful implementations of Silverfort in partnership with Acora. What do you think's gone well there to make this a reality? Because I think, you know, people listening today might look at this as another podcast where, you know, you promise the world and the reality is somewhat different. You know, we've seen it and we truly believe in it. So what do you think are some key steps for people to consider before they go down this journey of maybe choosing someone more disruptive, i.e. a Silverthought, than, say, a traditional privileged access management capability, which, let's be frank, takes 18 months to complete and actually never finishes?
Firstly, I think your customers have seen this as well, that, you know, our shared clients has been time to value. So certainly once Silverthought's installed, it's up and running, there's demonstrable protection going straight to the business. So take off those risky accounts first, yeah. Put MFA on those super privileged users who have access to the domain controllers, and straight away you've taken a large part of that attack surface straight off the, you know, off the table. If we're talking about in contrast to PAM, you have to think that the vault was designed probably about 25 years ago, and it's actually a pretty archaic technology. And really, it was designed for a point of time when every server had the name, had the same account, administrator, and the same password. Mm. That caused an absolute nightmare. So the first vault was very simple, was just to store the local accounts for those local machines. But as sort of time evolved and Active Directory came into part, you all of a sudden had, well, what do I do with these Active Directory accounts, which actually have access to multiple systems and multiple machines? This becomes a lot more problematic to then to put into a vault and then to manage it. So I think there's a right sizing with the vault technology. Use it for local accounts, use it for break glass areas. I think that's always going to be a key role for the vault. But actually, if you're thinking about what is the existential risk of a highly privileged account, it's actually breach. So if you can guarantee that actually you've got identity assurance on the use of that account and it's only going to be used under the appropriate circumstances, which Silverthought can do because it can enforce 2FA for every authentication, mm-hmm. that's going to move laterally. And also it can stop, you know, using legacy protocols. We could block NTLM. We could block access from entire OUs to access certain key resources. Doing so, you're able to right-size your PAM journey and use direct authentication, where also your identity is present, because it would be James logging in rather than a shared account, which presents its own challenges. And we can put the MFA on the actual authentication rather than the authentication into the vault itself. And I think you're building a whole world of pain if you're trying to put everything through the vault.
Yeah.
You know, a good analogy to me was like, imagine always having to go back to the hotel reception each time you want to go back in your hotel room to go and get a new card key. That essentially is the day in the life of a vault user.
It's a good analogy.
Having to go back and forth and queue up and get... So people then trying to bypass it, and you get a lot of user friction to go and do it. So there's not a never-ending adoption of the vault which will drive a successful business outcome. There's a point where the friction is seen as too great.
Yeah, actually, and the risk reduction off, value.
And the risk reduction is, oh, we don't want to do it. And that's before I mention the sticky issue of service accounts. So in most vault deployments, hey, let's start off with local accounts, relatively straightforward, we know where they are. Let's maybe do a bunch of shared accounts for these users who are our privileged users. I think we can get our head around that. They don't like it, but we can do it. But then when you start trying to vault all the other accounts, maybe business users and specifically service accounts, the vaults go into sticky mud, and quite often they sort of those projects grind to a halt.
Especially when there's a lot of legacy preceding that, right? So you think about organizations who, you know, haven't been born in the cloud and have grown with a legacy directory service like Active Directory. And it started off as one OU, then it started off as another domain, then there's federated domains, then there's ADFS. And you think about that account sprawl growing year on year, you know, it's actually a difficult question to answer for a lot of security leaders and IT leaders, which is, well, how many service accounts do you have and what is their purpose? And is that well-bound and understood? You know, and actually running these types of projects helps you uncover that, which I think is useful in itself, even without the technology, right? Just to have an inventory and clarity on what is authenticating to what and from where, to give you that visibility of actually, do you know what? We could probably turn half this stuff off,
yeah,
right? And actually de-risk the impact of doing it. Because from an IT change perspective, I think organizations always look at that as kind of the thing they want to sweep under the carpet, right? Because they've fallen foul of it before. They've gone through a PAM implementation. They've tried to, you know, look at credential rotation, integrating that into the PAM capability, and they've bricked a service. But
yeah,
and at that point, the business says, I'm not happy with this anymore because you're trying to stop my business from being breached and you're causing the same impact. And I think what we've got to do is think about how do organisations delicately approach that. And from what we've seen with Silverfort is that visibility and inventory initially is super helpful.
Yeah, it's exactly the point. So firstly, the point of risk for the business user or security operative trying to run the PAM program.
Yeah.
That it's not been enough to justify their job on the line to take an application down. So all of these accounts have existed in risk register land rather than let's deal with them land. That's no longer good enough because every time you run a pen test, you go and find a service account there and it's now no longer enough. Also, though, the previous technologies to understand, to your point, actually, about understanding the dependencies in those accounts were always static. So you had to write out a script to all of your different resources and hardware and then try and unpick which account was actually communicating with which resources. Mm-hmm. But it was always static. There were always gaps, and it was only one segment in time. So it wasn't enough information for the confidence to say, actually, I know that that service account only works with these application servers, and I can either turn it off or I can remove it. Whereas with Silverfort, because we plug in directly to all of the authentications hitting AD, we're able to see each and every authentication, and we're able to understand where those authentications were coming from and going to. That's essential data in that mapping. And we've seen, and your customers will have seen that as well, a sort of exponential increase in the amount of service accounts they were either able to deprecate or able to protect using Silverfort.
Yeah, you know, we talk about an attack surface, in industry, and people always think about that as external facing assets and IP addresses, but it's equally as important to the identities and the privilege-rich manager environments, right? And I think what would be useful for our listeners, and this is something which I found quite interesting, I know we're speaking before the podcast, was when we think about Silverfort as a control, and we spoke about ITDR, so detection and response, I think it'd be really useful just to talk about some lived experience you've seen, not with specific customers, but, you know, we were talking and you're saying now that some of your biggest customers have actually come from a response cycle, right? And I think it's really important that when Acora goes and tests our clients and proves to them where they're weak, because we're literally simulating and emulating what the threat actors are doing, we're able to replicate those real world experiences which have won you some of your biggest clients, right? And I think, you know, as we move through the maturity journey of cyber, if a control, all it does is help stop bad things from happening, that isn't good enough. Like, it should be able to use that telemetry, that data, that insight to invoke a response. You know, we talk about the concept of drawbridging, you know, whether or not that's an identity or a piece of network. So it'd be good for the listeners just to hear a little bit about what you've seen from a response side of Silverfort, as opposed to this is a control which stops bad things from happening across my identity, to actually, in the event of an attack, I can use this tool to protect and segment off my critical identities, my infrastructure, my resources.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. I obviously can't mention names of the organizations here, but they have both been substantial organizations. And we were called in at a point when they'd been breached. It was a scattered spider attack, and they'd pulled the plug to the internet. We had been in conversations with them beforehand, and we went in very quickly, which is a point about speed to deployment. We literally deployed in a very large organization in a matter of days. That allowed them to effectively turn back on their domain controls and connection to the, you know, to the internet and be outward facing, start business again. But what we were able to do at that point, it's probably two things really. One is we had visibility of all the authentications. So we were able to see new accounts being created by the threat actor who had some golden ticket somewhere and was able to create these new accounts at will. But we were also able to implement, and I would call it sort of, you know, hypervigilant MFA, which is really, okay, this isn't going to be our standard business operating procedure, but for the moment, every connection of every you know, interactive connection is going to require MFA.
Almost like when you're under duress, it's that heightened state, isn't it? A bit like threat levels you see outside.
Threat level, imagine powers. Like you're going in, presence under attack, everyone has to go and prove their ID to go to the next stage. It's exactly the same logic because you're under attack as a business and there's somebody that's stolen an identity and they are looking, literally about to deploy, you know, the payload and to, you know, deploy the ransomware. So the first point is we can effectively see the new accounts. We can put in MFA to stop those accounts then moving and causing damage. And the kind of your view, you talked about this drawbridge idea, and because we can do what's called identity segmentation, we're actually able to effectively stop accounts communicating across the domain. Even though that account might have the privileges, we could literally, you know, block off an OU where all your tier zero assets are and say only these group of users, only with the right second factor authentication,
yeah, meeting those certain
is allowed
things
to go through, which gives you the time to breathe, to spot the attacker, quarantine it, take it off the system. Otherwise, you just don't have time. And, you know, that's really how we've worked. It's been quite interesting. And that's really just a retrofit of how we go in to provide the control. But
yeah,
customers who like, actually, we really wish we had this. Can we do it really quickly? And thankfully, they've been able to.
Yeah. And again, just to repeat, you know, through all the testing we see, you know, we've worked really hard to actually come up with those use cases for Silverfort, right? So with some of our clients, we're actually able to prove through our red teaming capability the cause and effect. So pre and post implementation of Silverfort, we find that really powerful because rather than it being theory or a discussion on a podcast, we're able to actually drive evidence to prove that actually before these are the types of attacks we're able to achieve, whether or not it's man in the middle, golden ticket, Kerber roasting, whatever it might be. Let's prove to you using that technology, whether or not your SOC would pick up on it, what your response activity was and how long it would take you to respond. Typically, by the time the SOC's seen it, we've already moved laterally and have gained higher levels of privilege and persistence, et cetera. I think what, you know, as I urge people to listen to this and get them to encourage their type of thinking, it's around, if we can prove the before and after through the testing capability, that should really help, I think, in terms of that business case as to why organizations should consider Silverfort. But I'm going to deliberately flip it on its head here and say, what are some of the challenges you see? What are people's objections to these types of capabilities? You know, is it because they're planning an architectural move away? Perhaps they are moving their identity from on-premise to cloud, and therefore they think if they do that, and let's face it, that's a tough project in itself, they no longer have that traditional Active Directory risk and they can rely on conditional access. What are some of the objections you see? Just because, you know, I want our listeners to think about this in the rounds and have an objective view effectively.
Yeah, that was interesting. And actually, it's one of the customers, we've got a shared customer actually said, look, we're going to be purely in the cloud in 3 years' time. And actually, well, 2 years' time. And yeah, why would we need this protection? So the first thing is, okay, and I'd say, you know, it's one thing to have a very, you know, your architects and your board saying, we're going all cloud. But the reality is so many of your business systems and processes are tied to Active Directory. In some form or shape, Active Directory is going to be a persistent identity source, probably for decades, probably as long as I'm going to be in the business before hopefully I'm tired and done.
Until the sunset.
Until the sun sets. And it's just because of all of those dependencies. So it's a brand new, born in the cloud, organizations, no legacy dependents. Probably it's a bit of a niche use case for Silverfort. You know, I could talk about one, but I think, but, you know, wouldn't be. Our CEO recently was at a conference by a sort of, the well-known provider of conferences. And they sat in the room and said, anyone, put your hands up, if you're moving away from Active Directory. And everyone put their hands up. And then they said, put your hands up if you still have Active Directory. And 97% put their hands up. And they said, now put your hands up if you still think you'll have Active Directory in 5 years' time. And about the same number of hands went up.
So it's a pragmatic view.
So it's the pragmatic view, whatever it is. Now, interestingly, because of what we can also do with basically identity bridging, and this is it's another sort of reason around Silverfort, is that, you know, I want to go and move to, Azure AD, but Entra, for example, or it could be Okta or other providers, but let's just say Entra, who we have a top-tier partnership with Microsoft. Now, that's great. You can onboard all of your sort of proxied applications, all of your natural single sign-on applications. They can all be born and live in the cloud. However, all of your legacy infrastructure, your access to RDP, your file shares, et cetera, that is only going to ever speak the language of Kerberos or Active Directory. Simply, you can't change that protocol.
Yep.
So you end up with this two-tier speed. So what Silverfort's able to do, it's able to see the legacy authentication that hits Active Directory and then just hand that off to Entra. So you're able to actually use all of the benefits of conditional access, you know, sort of number matching, Microsoft Authenticator, and all of that device integrity and location awareness that you get with Entra, and then apply that to your on-prem architecture.
Yeah, which is huge.
Which is massive. So if you think about big tectonic plates, Silver Fork can help move those. But normally we're just caught in a little sort of identity, you know, security little puddle. But actually the organization's big aim is I want to move strategically off Active Directory to Entra. Now, I've just told you that Active Directory is going to be around for ages. However, if you can make Active Directory effectively a slave for authentication purposes to Entra, you're getting the benefit of all the modern authentication and effectively having a the legacy part there. So Silver Fork can really be seen in many ways as a Switzerland of identity. Is that we talk to everyone.
Makes nice
we don't content. Take it, we act as a sort of multiple translator, in between what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful as well, because that architectural complexity is huge, and it isn't a security initiative to my mind. It's the benefit of, migrating a on-premise identity store into Entra Azure AD as it's previously known. That's got huge benefits outside of the security realm as well, in terms of user experience, monitoring, potentially cost as well, and management overhead. And I think the fact that Silver Fork can act almost as that middleware layer, as the translator, as it were, is really powerful for those organizations who have got that pragmatic view that they're going to need Active Directory for the next 5 years, however many years longer, right? And I think that's really useful, again, to think about when we look at horizon scanning. Where do you see, the future of Silver Fork? Is there anything you can share today in terms of a roadmap or about what some of the changes are? Is it about actually maximizing what you do today? It'd be really useful, I think, for our listeners to understand not necessarily the five-year view, but what's potentially coming along in the future.
I certainly think that I could share, which I think we're on sort of,
on the
known roadmap this year. I mean, I think in terms of where our company focus is, I think that would be okay to talk about is actually we want to be the agnostic glue between different identity providers, So when you buy either Lenovo or Dell or from laptop, you don't buy identity security from those. So we want to be the security that sits on top of these different vendors. Now, if you look at the space where we've had most resonance, it's probably in the privileged access market. So, and I definitely think something about our unique, identity insertion technology, which basically allows us to sit on the domain controllers and to see all of this authentication and in other technologies as well, means that it naturally lends us to PAM. So I think we're looking at potentially, seeing what you could do around just-in-time access. Yep. I think that might be an interesting way, because the nirvana for privilege access management is to have no standing privileges.
Exactly.
Therefore, you can go to bed, snooze on a Sunday afternoon. I'm at no risk. There aren't any privileges to be abused from that state. Everyone's been trying to work to that area for as long as possible. And I think also the insight that we provide from all of the authentication data that we see can allow us to inform and accelerate identity governance programs as well. So they're the other long programs that take an awful long time to make a decision. And quite often we've seen sort of access reviews. It's been a tick box exercise in the end. Managers see it like, does James still need all of this access?
Yeah, quarterly review.
Deep sigh, ticking a box. Yeah, that's fine. However, if we could actually see what you had authenticated to over
that time, should inform your policy.
Should inform your policy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then ultimately, we can make that dynamic and self-fulfilling. Then how good is that? Actually, we have rights being driven by usage rather than being driven by sort of legacy understanding. So I think that's certainly one of the areas that we're looking at and we would naturally lend ourselves to.
And I think there's some good business benefits you've called out there for those who aren't necessarily as technical listening in. If you think about the ability to have compliance on demand and have your policies informed by data rather than that kind of, okay, our audit's coming up, we need to make sure we've done an access control review as part of our ISMS, so let's go and annoy all our IT administrators and ask them to tick a box to say they've done a thing. This to me seems like the evolution of that. And I think if you couple that reduction of compliance burden, the fact that your policies are driven by data, and then probably the insurance benefit, which I know we touched on very briefly, it'd be good to hear from you on that. Around, well, actually now, insurers are becoming a lot more critical. They're becoming a lot more scrutinous. They have suffered because their portfolios have actually been breached and they're having to pay outright. It's no longer the cash cow the insurance industry thought it was. It'd be good just to hear from you a little bit about, if you were thinking about how to position this to a set of business leaders rather than technology leaders, could you maybe just elaborate on some of those points and share why you think this is such a crucial control to consider and why organizations should work with Acora and Silver Fork to actually prove why these things have got that, you know, that business reduction value rather than a technical.
Yeah. Firstly, from just a pure risk reduction value, we are proven to deliver more than all these other technologies, which people just buy because they've been buying them. Mm. You know, I think that's just, oh, no one ever got fired for buying British AV Telecom or IBM or something like that, you know, yada, yada. So firstly, it's a challenge, that conception. And I think the best way it does is, because we align so tightly with a lot of these cyber insurance regulations, and there has been a bit of learning about what is it with MFA. But I think if we look at sort of two areas. Now, one of the cyber insurance requirements is you must have MFA available for all internal administrative access. So this has been, I think, loosely interpreted for some years. There's, oh, we've got, you know, MFA on the VPN, we've got some areas. But I think this is going to be tightened up. The insurers are going to go, no, have all of your privileged users who have access to Active Directory or can do a PowerShell script from one machine to another. Is there MFA on that activity, not just on these other areas? So there's going to be far more, it's going to be an exacting qualification of this.
And you don't want to fall foul of that, i.e. the insurer asks you that question and the answer is no. You want to be ahead of the game.
Right? Yeah. Or yeah, because obviously you don't want your insurance policy to be invalid because actually you've fudged the questionnaire. And I think there's going to be a tightening up. There is already a tightening up we can see around this. So we are the gold standard for that control. But also it's time to value and disruptions to business. So if I'm a business owner going, I don't want any business downtime as well, because it's always that fine balance between what you can do. Because Silverfort has such a unique, lightweight architecture, meaning that we only need a service to be installed on the Active Directory domain controllers, and we don't require any modification of applications. We don't require, you know, any other, you know, agents to be installed on endpoints. Effectively, you can have this control without upsetting the apple cart. So that's certainly the areas on that part. And the other part is around service accounts now, or non-human identities, as I think the new nomenclature of it is. So we're also seeing some insurance providers saying, now you need to give me a list of all of your service accounts and tell me what they're doing. You know, crikey. Yeah. So people, you know, most organizations think they know about what service accounts they've got. They hope they're all in one OU. We've got the same naming convention. Reality is, you know, 10 years ago, there was a developer called Bob. He just used his own credentials, shoved it in a batch script. No one knows what they do. So there's a whole sea of unknown accounts floating around, which are the ones that people fall foul of, but also need auditing. You need to prove you've got it as well. So I think that's the shift that we're going to see, is everyone's going to be required to have greater visibility, not just say that they got it, demonstrate it. And then further in the future, it won't just be that, but we'll say, do you have effective control or a process over this? So we're helping, you know, providers like ServiceNow actually develop a CMDB. So you've got a process around service account management.
Yeah, and around, you know, you're almost like an identity database, right? You know, you think about that. We always think about a CMDB as assets and an AMDB or software asset management. But actually, how do we get a proper inventory on these identities, what they're doing, what they're communicating with, and why? The insurers are going to become more hot on this because of what we've just described before. So I think it's really key to call out. Yeah. You know, just to round off the discussion, I always like to end these kind of with a couple of key takeaways, I think, for listeners. And I've got a couple which I'll share and then pass to you. Hopefully you've got some different ones. Yeah. But I think for me and for those listening today, thank you so much. I think the first thing for me is around actually proving that these controls work. You know, we have got the capability at Acora, and I'm sure there are other businesses as well, to actually assure organizations and test and prove them against what threat actors would be doing. I think it's such a crucial evolution over the last 10 years from that traditional pen test where you get a PDF report and there's a load of highs which you go and try and remediate, and then you come back around next year to actually, these are the threat actor groups targeting your industry. These are the attacker techniques they use. We will replicate, simulate, and emulate all of those attacks across your environment and prove to you where you're weak. And always we prove identity and poor segmentation of the network. And for me, the bread and butter and the key takeaway is, you know, if you don't believe it, let's prove it to you, because we've got the capability to do that nowadays. And I think if you think about those business benefits and you're thinking about how to position a service like Silverfort with Acora supporting, think about it as a risk reduction. Think about it as a safely moving or safely, running that architecture. So being able to carry legacy debt, but actually having controls which you know work to enable you to carry that debt safely. And then I think lastly, it's actually, a cost play, because the investment into a capability like Silverfort, the data and the telemetry you derive from it as a result, that should really help you on your next insurance policy renewal to be able to actually go back to your insurer and say, that's too expensive. Because now insurers are cottoning on, so are the threat actors. I think it's just a really powerful way to position this as business value rather than a traditional, it will stop, golden ticket, Kerber roasting, which, let's be frank, won't mean anything to a CFO,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on all of those ones. So certainly from the compliance point and cost, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer about actually you need this. And sometimes it's like, we need to go and see it. So Silverfort's quickly in there. For those who actually are a little bit in between the middle, we've invested in a lot of electronic technologies, we've got a conventional privilege access management project going on and IGA, where does this fit in? I think this should be seen as a foundational technology which will actually make all of those projects go faster.
It could almost be the precursor, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it allows you to put the right accounts in the vault, not waste and spend lots of time discussing what you put in. You can put them in quickly, and the same with identity governance. And then if you're thinking, actually, what if something happens? God forbid, but it does, because you have all that. What capability do you need to firstly see this and then stop it? I think Silverfort's unique in that area. And, I think we've got a shared customer who had, not buyer's regrets, he regretted not buying Silverfort sooner, who'd actually been through an attack and then subsequently at his latest company had purchased Silverfort, because if something happens and you need to see it, then what's going to stop a threat actor who's got through? And to your word before, if you assume breach, how are you going to stop it? And therefore, at that point, Silverfort actually provides the ability to stop an attack when literally all of the other tool sets are redundant.
Yeah.
Someone's got the right account. That account has access to your core assets. How are you going to stop them? Because that account is expected to be getting to those core assets. It's not to be picked up by your XDR system. It should be there. So therefore, everything else is down tooling, going, everything's great. How are you going to be able to stop it? So that's where Silverfort, I would say, is a must, because actually, how can you have your key identity store, Active Directory, which controls all the valuable assets of your business, how can you allow that key vulnerability to persist, I would say? And it's just, I think it's about education. And that's exactly what your processor, Cora, does with your red teaming, saying, this is the problem. Now let's emulate that same problem with these controls in place, and we've shown that we've been able to stop it. So I think that kind of ties up, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't. Proof is in the pudding, right? That's the common challenge we see is, I don't believe it, show me. And now we can do that.
So. A nice way to finish off.
So yeah, that's really good, Nick. And hopefully today everyone who's been listening has found this really insightful. I think both of us talk through lived experience, and we've been on both sides of the fence here and have seen these types of attacks. We've seen the reports, and day in, day out, we're helping organizations realize that this risk is truly prevalent and that the threat of identity is going to be ever increasing. Thanks to everyone for listening today, and we really hope you've enjoyed the discussion.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks.